Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, a couple of guys who never seem to score well on the same day, Frank and Mike.
All right, welcome back. Now, if you remember last episode, episode 7, we talked about some tips for tuning up your golf game during the off season, the impending off season that we're talking about regretting. And we also talked a little bit about hitting from the thick rough. So this week, we're going to jump into the mental game. It's a topic we like to talk about quite a bit, and we're going to be dedicating this whole podcast to that. So one thing we're going to talk about is the top five problems that affect your mental golf game and little things you can do to remedy that. And then later on in our bonus tip, we're going to talk about some recommended reading, a couple of mental game golf books that we've went through ourselves and have had a lot of benefit from. So we're going to share those with you a little bit later in the podcast. But before we go any further, we want to just give a quick thank you for one of the reviews we received on iTunes. And when Mike and I read this, this is really why we do this. You know, we talk about we're not pros. We just enjoy the game. We love learning the game. That's why we created Golficity. That's why we share the articles we share. And that's why we do this podcast. So when we hear something like this, it really just energizes us and invigorates us. And we just can't thank you guys enough. We've had a lot of great 5-star reviews come in on iTunes, and I know we keep asking for them and love to see them. And we just had one that came in, and I wanted to read that here. It came from Steve Stab, and it said, "I found this podcast recently and have now subscribed. Excellent content, informative and entertaining. Shared this podcast with my daughter who has recently started playing golf. Great tips and information for beginners and seasoned golf vets. Website is also well done and a must bookmark for serious golfers. Keep up the great work." So Steve, we can't thank you enough for that. Again, that's why we do this. And just getting that little bit of feedback really helps us. It helps us to gear the podcast in the way you guys want to hear it. So I encourage those. Also, as always, we say, email us at podcast@golficity.com. Let Mike and I know some of the topics you want to hear us talk about. Let us know what's working. Is it helping your game? Give us that feedback, because that's how we're going to kind of tailor that. So before we jump into the meat of this, Mike, what's going on?
Hey, Frank, how you doing? You know, I got to tell you, this afternoon I got a call from a college buddy, and he got a tee time at my favorite never-played-before course, Bethpage Black. Now, I don't know if you ever played it, but this course has been on my bucket list for some time. Living in this area, going to PGA Tour events and walking the grounds, I've always wanted to play it. So we got like a 10:34 tee time. Perfect. It's going to be a beautiful day, like 75 degrees, but I cannot go.
Oh, I hope you got a good reason.
I have a very important business meeting that I cannot get out of. But
all right.
I said yes the minute he said it. And I said, oh, you know what? Let me go back to my calendar and take a look. So, but one day I will get out there. Have you ever played Bethpage Black?
I haven't. And I actually was just visiting with a friend from the island who plays there once in a while. But it's just it's a pain. You got to call the night before, but you still have to show up. They said some of these guys are out there in their cars at 4 a.m. getting online. You know, and even my father is an avid golfer. He's played pretty much every bucket list golf course that we keep mentioning. You know, one of my big ones is Kiwa. He's played there. You pretty much, you name it, you run him down, he's played them. He just actually just played Pinehurst number 2. But
I heard he shot a 76 there too.
Yeah, he killed it out there. He'd whip me if I played out there. I tell you, I wouldn't be shooting that. But that's the thing. I mean, and we're from New York, New Jersey. He's playing these other courses, but here you're talking about a New York course, Bethpage, and that he hasn't even been on it. You know, in 40 years of playing golf, he hasn't been out there. So it's something I've wanted to do too. You and I, we'll get out there one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what course would you pick? Any course?
If it was literally any course, I'd have to play Augusta. But, you know, you can pretty much take that one off. But I've personally always wanted to play Kiwa. I like that idea. I like those ocean courses. I like that when the wind comes in and plays a factor. You know, some of the Hawaiian courses, same things. Plus, you got that beautiful scenery the whole time. I mean, that's my kind of game. You know, a little bit of a Lynx feel, but with that ocean breeze, it's a real challenge. You know, you know going into it, you're not going to score well. But those are those days you don't get. It's like Bethpage Black. You know, but you don't care. It's the day. You know, make a day of it, right?
And that's the mental golf game you just talked about.
Yeah, exactly. I think those days you just throw everything away and just enjoy it, right? So, all right, so let's dive in a little bit here. This article that we want to talk about, we have posted on the site under the instruction segment, and we're talking about the mental golf game. And this actually comes from a couple of great guys. There's two authors, Dr. Paul McCarthy and Dr. Mark Jones. We've talked to these guys. They're really nice guys. They sent us a lot of great stuff here, and they posted this on the site maybe a couple of weeks ago. But they're both doctors of sports psychology. So this comes from a good place, and they've studied this for years, but they're also just really big fans of the game like we are. So what they discuss in here, and like I said, we're going to cover their top five. And then later on, we talked about in the bonus tip, we're going to talk about some recommended reading. And their book is actually one of those that we're going to talk about. And in that book, and I'll get into this more later, but in that book, they talk about the top 50 mental faults or mental hurdles that are most common to golfers and how to get over them. And today, what we're going to talk about is their top five. What they say, and I love this, I really love this quote, Mike. They say, golf is a game that's played by the body, but is won in the mind.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's just sets the tone for something so interesting. And we talk about this so much, about being 90% mental, 10% physical, but that doesn't correlate with where we actually spend our time practicing. And that really jumps into the first one. And the first hurdle that they said was the number one struggle that they came across was that golfers say that they don't play their best when it matters the most to them. And what is the reasoning behind that? And I think we can all relate to this. You know, you're maybe hitting the ball incredibly well on the range, but then you go out on the course and you're like, I just can't replicate that. I'm all over the place. What is the deal here? And what they said is that a lot of golfers will practice long, but as they say, long and lazy rather than short and focused. And what the guys recommend is practicing with a purpose. So instead of just going out there and let's say, okay, you're out on the range and you hit a bunch of balls, you may hit 3-4 good ones and, you know, 1 or 2 terrible shots. Well, it's really easy to forget those terrible shots when you're not really focusing on anything. And what you don't realize is that if you were out on the course, those 2 or 3 terrible shots could translate into 5, 6, 7 strokes in all the recovery shots it takes to get back to, especially if you went out of bounds or things like that. The other thing that the guys note is that when you're just out on the range, you're mostly hitting off of a flat surface under perfect conditions. So when they say practicing with a purpose, what they mean by that is you want to get out there and try as much as possible to replicate real situations on the course. So if you have the ability to get out there and try things like uphill and downhill lies, you know, and this is where they're saying practicing with short, you know, more focused practice rather than long practices. What they mean is instead of spending a half hour at the range, even if you have, you know, there's a slow day at the course, you can get out there at twilight or whatever it may be, and you can get out and just throw a couple of balls down in the rough, in a bad lie, and just focus on improving that area of their game. That is going to more replicate, you know, real life play. So they say, picking those types of things. If you don't have that opportunity and instead you are just on the range, you still want to make a more formalized practice out of it. So instead of just, you know, smacking a couple balls down range and just looking what kind of distances you're getting, they say instead pick targets and almost make a mental game in your head where you have to hit that target. It's very similar to if you were on the tee and you had to hit the fairway, or if you were in the fairway and you had to hit the green. So they're saying replicate that situation as much as possible. You want to make it like you're out there. And what I really liked, this is a salute, like a little suggestion that they had. And Mike, you and I should try this next time we're out there. But what they say is, do a little bit of a skills competition. If you're out at the range with your buddy, they'll say, let's say pick one of the targets, maybe the 150 flag, and both of you hit 5 shots, and whoever hits, you know, the closest, you know, in that range, maybe the 2 out of 3 or whatever it may be. But what you're doing is you're creating a competition. So it's more similar to being out there when you're playing on the weekends with your buddies, and there is that feel of competition. You're replicating that. So those little bits that we'll talk about a little bit more that come into some of the other things they talk about, but things like nerves and the pressure of having to hit the shot come back into your practice. So you become more aware of them, you become more fluid with them, and it makes it easier to then translate that out onto the course. So this way you're not stepping from the range out on the course and losing everything because you're saying this is a whole different game. Because what it is a whole different mental game. Mike, you agree with me there?
Yeah, you know, I enjoy doing that. Before I tee off, I'm usually playing with a buddy or a colleague, client, whoever it is, and we'll be on the range and we will do that competition. I've done it many times. It's great. You know, we'll pick a target because there's usually 5-6 targets on a driving range, and we'll say, hey, listen, 5 balls so you can get the closest, you know, so you could do this, you could do that, and you start that competitive feel inside you, which kind of, I don't know, it gets rid of those nerves and you're ready to play before you jump on the first tee. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So what do you want to jump into and take in the next one?
Sure. I mean, you know, you think about that. You also think about putting, and you go from nerves to losing confidence in putting. And basically, when you putt, we know putting is very difficult. And if we convince ourselves that we're a bad putter, we're going to fail every time. And, you know, what these guys are talking about is have confidence that you're, you know, doing something that's difficult. And, you know, instead of trying to, you know, always succeed at it, you could practice it and you can kind of grasp it, Frank. I don't know, it's tough. You can kind of understand that this is really tough to do and I could do it, you know, and I'm just kind of talking about, not the psychological part about it. I always give up maybe 5 to 6 more putts than I should on a golf course. We all do it. Par 4, we're on the green in 2, we end up with a 5. Next hole, par 4, on the green in 3, end up with a 6, whatever the case may be. And, you know, and that's because we shake, our hands shake. We know that the putt is important. You're quiet. Everyone's standing around you. So the key with this one, I think, Frank, is just have confidence that you can do such a difficult thing like putting.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. And I think what the point that they make about just changing your perception of what failure and success are on the green is what's going to help that confidence, because they say it's very easy to feel like a failure with putting, because putting in general is a very difficult thing. Like, you're going to miss a lot of putts. It's kind of like they talk about in baseball, like, you know, if you hit 300, you're in the Hall of Fame. But if you calculate that out, you know, you're getting 3 hits and 10 at bats. Okay. So you got to change that perception of what it is because of the fact that it is so difficult. No different than baseball. You've got a fast pitch coming at you. It's a difficult thing to do. So the percentage is not going to be 90% of the time. It's going to be something more like that 30, 40% of the time that you're making some of these medium to long putts. And another thing that they mention here, that little confidence builder that I really like, and I don't remember which episode it was, but one of the previous episodes of the podcast, I talked about this, is I love those little confidence building putts that you do right before you get out there. I like to just, you know, if I'm on the putting green before teeing off, I always make sure to finish with maybe 5-6 2-foot putts and just drill them. You just want to hear the sound of it hitting the cup, and that just, you know, creates that that confidence, rather than trying to finish up with a couple of 8-10 foot putts and maybe make 1 out of 10, and you're going out there kind of questioning your skill, your putting skill. But in reality, you shouldn't expect to make many more than that from that range. So that's something that I definitely agree with. So the next thing, again, what you're going to find is a common theme here. We're going through each one of these, and it comes a lot down to nerves, but that's what it is for mental game. So they talk about the number 3 thing that the guys came up with was that people say they can't cope with their nerves, especially when they're on the first tee. And we've all felt this. And if it doesn't take a genius to figure this out, I mean, the main reason why you're experiencing those nerves is kind of like what Mike said, people around you watching and things like that. On the first tee, you're right by the clubhouse. You know, you may have other guys waiting to tee off. There's a lot of people around and you just really want to make it work. So the nerves are going to really kick in. And nerves are a normal human response. It's a fight or flight response and things like that. And the main thing you need to understand is that that's exactly what it is. It's nerves. Just kind of embrace it. Don't try to fight it too much. What's going to happen is all these other physical factors are going to come into play, like changing your swing, trying to steer the ball and things like that. So the guys are operating strictly from a mental standpoint as far as their suggestions go. And what they're saying is, really just do whatever provides you with the most confidence in that most nervous moment. And in other words, it's an interesting suggestion is what they say is Start with something sensible, and on the first tee, if nerves are really getting to you, hit whatever club you're most confident in. You know, it can be a long par four, and you don't necessarily need to pull out the driver, because if you're up there, you're nervous, you know, you're like I said, you're gripping it too tight, whatever it may be, because you're loaded up with nerves, you know, driving the ball 300 yards but two fairways over is not necessarily going to be better than pulling out the five iron that you've got so much confidence in that, you know, you could just put it out there 200 yards in the middle. You know, you may not be as long as everybody else, but you're in the middle, you're off the first tee, and you're off and running. Then you can play the rest of your 18 holes however you want to play them. And Mike, this is something you even said recently when you were struggling a little bit with the driver, and you've since worked back to it, but you were hitting the hybrid off because, you know, you just wanted to hit something you had confidence in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I just felt so comfortable with that club, and I felt uncomfortable with the driver, so I immediately switched over to the hybrid. But you know, it just, I forced myself to overcome it and go back to it and work on it and, you know, just get all those bad hits out of my system, so to speak. And I'm loving the way I'm hitting it now. So absolutely, Frank.
Yeah. So that's something I would say, like, give that a try. We don't want to, again, it's not necessarily the longest term solution. I don't want to see it where listeners are saying, I'm never going to pull my driver out on the first tee again. But just until you start to get used to the situation, it's no different than, let's say, a professional athlete who's playing in front of a big crowd. You know, the first couple times, the nerves are obviously going to be higher than the seasoned pros who they're just about as comfortable in front of, you know, 500,000 people as they are in their living room. So, you know, for the first while, if you're really struggling with those nerves, just hit a club you're confident in. You're not, you know, chances are, you know, most of us are not playing for the big bucks anyway. So just hit something, get it out there and get your round started. And then when you start to feel more comfortable, more relaxed on the first tee, those are the times to tee it up with the driver.
Frank, I'm going to jump in the next one. Stuck in a slump. And the guys talk about, you know, we all go through this. We all go through it when we just stink. You know, I mean, and even the best, I mean, look at Tiger. For many years recently, he's gone through a slump before bouncing back. And, you know, Rory McIlroy on the PGA Tour hasn't won this year after just dominating last year. So, you know, the one thing, and these guys talked about it in the article, is, you know, you have to figure out what about your game stinks. I mean, you ever see the guy in the office who says, I'm playing so terribly right now, I just can't chip or I can't putt. But realistically, you never really truly identify your weakness. And the quick story they say is that in the article is that there's one pro golfer that they talked with who said that he just couldn't putt. His approach shots were great, but his putting was awful. He just couldn't shake it off. He didn't know what to do about it. So when they dissected his game a little bit more, they noticed that his putting was 29 putts per round, which was just above the tour average. But his greens in regulation hit was 60% when his peers were at 75%. So back up a little bit, the golfer said, I stink at putting. Realistically, it's his approach shots that needed to be worked on. So, you know, same thing with me. Recently, I thought my putting was ruining me. I thought I was never going to be able to play this game again. I was leaving so many strokes out there. But, you know, I look back on the scorecard and I looked at some of my shots, you know, mid-iron stuff wasn't really that great that day. So, you know, my putts weren't that bad. And it was the same as this story. And it's true, Frank. I mean, I think you need to identify your exact weakness, and that can kind of get you out of that slump that you think that you're in.
Yeah, I agree. That is the exact thing that you should take away from this, is identifying your weakness, because it is so easy just to blame it on whatever and then focus your attention on the wrong thing. The perfect example, like you said, is Rory. I mean, everybody's breaking down what's wrong with his swing, this, that, and the other thing, but everyone was so quick to jump and say it's the equipment and, you know, since he switched to Nike, he can't hit it and whatever it may be. But look, that guy's got such a pure swing. Forget the club. He could hit with a shovel and do better than we could do out there. So that's the thing. Like, it's very easy when you're in a slump to start getting down on yourself, start identifying the wrong things. But a slump is exactly that. It's mental. Unless you have some sort of physical injury that you didn't have before, chances are your swing is the same. From a physical standpoint, you have the same swing. And this is where slumps are mental. It's like, again, I'll use the same baseball analogy. You see batters go through slumps all the time. It's not like they're swinging a different bat. It's not like they're, you know, facing different, you know, different guys they've never seen before. These guys are doing the same thing out there year after year. It's a mental thing. So what Mike said is exactly right. Just try to take a more of a step back from it and truly identify what it is that, that the problem is. And then you can go back to what we said in the first takeaway, which was do focused practice on that thing. I mean, if you truly find that your problem is chipping, then don't go to the range and hit your driver for a half hour and go home. You know, find a place where you can practice your chipping, go in your backyard, do like we talked about in the last episode, the off-season tips that we had where we were talking about different ways you could chip even in the off-season indoors or different tools you can use. So there's so many things you can do. So the last one we want to cover, and this is a big thing that I know I've even struggled with, and I've been working on a lot this year. And what the guys talk about is losing concentration at different times during a round of golf. And I actually had this the last time I was out there. And what they're talking about is, and I feel like everyone has experienced this one time or another. You're playing well for a while, and then all of a sudden, your game just kind of seems to slip away from you and you notice you're just really not focusing. Or there's nothing to me much more frustrating than when I hit a shot and I hit it wrong and I'm kicking myself because I know I really didn't give that shot the attention it deserves before I hit it. So what the guys say is that usually if you see this happening, that your concentration is waning, it usually has something to do with distractions. And these distractions may be apparent to you or they may not. I mean, there's some that are obvious. We've all had this where maybe you're out there and the office is calling you or your phone is bleeping with emails and you're starting to think, oh, well, what do I got to do when I get back to the office or family or something like that. But there's some that are also less obvious. You may not be 100% aware of what's distracting you or what's taking your mind off your game. But what they say is distractions mean we're shining our mental spotlight on things that are not helpful to execute the task at hand. So in other words, you may not, you know, when you are playing golf, there's a lot of things that need to be concentrated on. And when you're shining, again, that mental spotlight on something else, you just can't focus on the things you need to focus on. So the tip that they have, and this is something that I've talked about in the past too, the best way to kind of keep that focus and keep that concentration is by developing and sticking with a pre-shot routine. Pre-shot routines will help you focus. This has been the biggest thing I've done this year. Last year, I had kind of a sloppy pre-shot routine and it would kind of vary with the shot. You know, maybe tee shots would be a little different than chip shots or whatever it may be. Or if I'm playing, not playing well, sometimes I would throw out my pre-shot routine and just get up there and hit it. And that's actually going in the wrong direction. It's doing the wrong thing. Because what pre-shot routines do is they force you to focus on the shot. And it forces you to bring that mental spotlight, to shine that mental spotlight, so to speak, back onto your golf game and away from whatever is distracting you. It'll also help you to do one shot at a time because you're focusing on that pre-shot routine. You're not thinking about the next shot. I mean, you're only thinking about this shot. And pre-shot routines can be very personal. Everyone can do things a little bit different. So I'm not going to tell you how to do it. But what I would say was whatever pre-shot routine you develop, make sure you do the same thing every time. The best example of this is taking a free throw in basketball. If you notice, everybody does something a little bit different. They bounce the ball a different amount of times, whatever it may be. But each player, and watch the pros, next time you catch a basketball game, every one of them will do the same exact pre-shot routine before taking that shot. And what that does is it puts their mind into a rhythm, into that motion. It takes it off of anything else. Mike, do you use a pre-shot routine yourself?
I do. Different shots. I have different routines. How many times I take a practice swing on chip shots versus zero practice swings on the tee. I just don't like to swing my driver more than once off a tee. So I do different things. And I totally agree with this point, Frank. Confidence, it does get killed sometimes during a game. My biggest confidence killer is a bad hole. You know, my feeling is par's good, bogeys happen, double bogeys anger me, and triple bogeys just take me out of it. So, you know, when that happens, I'm just gone. You know, the next hole, the next two holes, the next three holes, my concentration just goes. And it's really hard to bring it back. You know, that's why, you know, it's key to kind of hang on to that and shake things off out there, because bad holes can tend, you know, lead you right down the wrong path. And you can end up, you know, with a 95 that day or 105 or 115 just because of one bad hole.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what exactly what this is going to do, is it's going to take your mind off of the last hole and make you focus on the shot at hand, because your pre-shot routine is there for that purpose. It's something that no matter how you want to structure it, again, like I said, I don't want to make that too rigid, because if it doesn't feel comfortable to you, if it doesn't feel right, you're going to lose your focus, and there goes the whole idea of it. So everyone's pre-shot routine can be different, but what I'm saying is, whatever it is, stick with it. And it can be like what I'm saying that I do, which is where I have the same kind of pre-shot routine for every shot, or what Mike does. He has a different one for each shot, but he's using the same routine for those same types of shots. So that's the idea. It makes you feel comfortable. It brings your focus back in. And if you're focusing on the whole idea of stepping back, lining up the ball, you know, taking your swing, whatever it may be, you know, getting your feet settled, getting your stance the right way. If you're going through all that, chances are there's no room to be thinking about that triple bogey that you just posted. So it's very important. I would be one of my biggest takeaways, and we're going to cover pre-shot routines even more in future episodes. And we'll, all, as always, have all the notes for this in case you're missing anything, or if you're driving or anything. Like I always say, don't worry about it. We'll have the notes to everything we're talking about, and we'll have the link to this and the other articles that we're going to be discussing. And you can get to those by going to golficity.com/episode8, and you'll be able to find that. So what we're going to do is then jump into, I want to talk about some mental game books. And this is kind of a perfect lead in, because like I said, Dr. Paul McCarthy and Dr. Mark Jones, who are the ones who came up with the tips that we're talking about right now, also wrote one of the books that I wanted to discuss. But before I do that, I want to talk about the number one book that has helped my mental game. And I think a lot of people can say the same thing, because even if you just jump on Amazon and you just search, you know, mental game, you know, golf mental game books, you'll see that this pops up usually as number one or number two. And we'll have a link in the article to the to Amazon there too, so you can find it. It makes it a little easier. But this one is, it's Zen Golf, it's called, Mastering the Mental Game by Dr. Joseph Parent. I was actually first introduced to this. I had heard an interview with him a couple years ago. The book has actually been out for a little while, but it's just been, you know, receiving constant acclaim, because I think it's just perfectly written. And there's a lot of takeaways from this. There's a lot of things that you'll find. And what he really talks about is things like how to gain unconditional confidence, how to find natural commitment, and listen to your intuition out there. And he really starts to dive into different ways and very practical ways to cultivate and strengthen your awareness. And these are ways of staying cool, calm, collected. He talks about things like remembering to breathe, and they may sound like simple concepts, but you should, if you know, as you're listening to this, and as you know, just as I'm saying it, we're starting to see some themes develop, some of the same themes, things like nervousness, loss of focus, all these things that create a bit of a problem. And what Dr. Joseph Parent does when he goes through everything in his book is he gives some, what I think one of my favorite parts about the book is he had a lot of really great analogies and kind of sayings that would just, you could just jump back to them when you're out there, but also practical stuff. I mean, we're talking about a guy who coached a lot of professional athletes. I mean, these guys pay him the big bucks to teach this type of stuff. And here we're talking about a book you can grab on Amazon for, I think it was $15 when I got it or something like that. So for less than the price you're going to pay for a dozen golf balls, this is what's going to help your game. And for me personally, this book helped my game more than anything else I did this year. And what's most miraculous about that is when we all think like, what am I going to do to help my game? We start thinking about our swing, and we start thinking about little improvements and swing techniques and practice. Well, what I find most remarkable is in this entire book, I think he mentioned anything to do with your physical swing maybe once or twice. It's all mental, and it comes back to that mental game. The physics of the swing doesn't really come in. He talks about actually what a big thing that the author explores in this is, rather than adding things to your swing, subtracting. And what I mean by that is it's very common for us to do this is, let's say we're slicing the ball and we'll start doing, all right, I got to change my stance, I got to change my grip, I got to change my aim. And all of a sudden, you're adding and adding and adding these layers onto your natural swing. And what he talks about is coming back to that natural swing by removing that. Because I know everyone out there can say they've done this before. You've having that really bad round, and then all of a sudden you eventually say, you know what? Forget this. I'm just going to forget trying to fix everything and just swing. And what happens? You start playing well again. So he gives you very practical ways to get into that and practical ways to do that. And now, one thing too, it's a little side tip that really helped me and that I would suggest is that a lot of books now you can get on the audiobooks, the audio versions. And this is one that I highly suggest that for. While I personally have a physical copy of the book and I like to throw that in my bag just as a refresher, having the audiobook I found to be the most help, because what I'll do is it, and it's great too. The author himself reads and he does a great job conveying his point. It's never dry, it's never dull, it's never boring. But if I, especially when I'm having that frustrated slump where we talked about earlier, I'll throw this on. I have it on my iPhone because you can download it from iTunes. You can download it from Amazon. Again, I'll throw the links in there in the article so you can get to them easy. But you listen to it on the way and it'll just like it serves as a refresher. I think the whole book is maybe 3 hours long, so you could no problem. You mean you could finish that in a day? But I like to consume it in little chunks while I'm driving to the golf course. You know, Mike, have you had a chance to check out this book?
You know, Frank, you know, I don't read. I'm not a big fan of it. So I'm really intrigued by these, you know, these books on tape here. I think I'm going to download them and listen to them now because, you know, I'll be honest with you. I got so good this year and it was all from just listening to the Golficity podcast. So I don't think I need anything else, right? I wish it was that easy.
No, that's all you need. And the best part is that's free. So, hey, what are
exactly.
You know?
But, you know, I haven't really had a chance to read it. I think I will check them out. I want to listen to them. I'd love the idea of listening to them on the way to the course because instead of listening to some music, you can actually kind of get psyched up for the round you're about to play. So I'm going to give that a shot.
That's exactly right. And I've had it before. Like you read a book and you learn some great concepts, but then some tend to, you know, sometimes you forget them. And he even covers that in the book, which I like for a lot of the pros that he worked with, he would identify just a couple of mental points that really helped their game, just a couple of mental reminders, and you'd actually have them write that right on their yardage book. So for each shot, before they take the shot, they look at their yardage book and they would see things, whatever it need to be that they need to remember. Even if it was something as simple as remembering to breathe through their shot, he puts that on there and it's a quick reminder. But that's what I love about the audiobook. Excellent reminder. I actually value it much higher even than the physical book. I mean, I enjoyed reading it, but just having that refresher and just being able to jump around. You know, I just made a couple of notes of where some segments are where I'm struggling. Things he talks about, like even having confidence off. There's one part of the book where he talks about even a pro who is struggling with that confidence off of the first tee. And he said he was a teaching pro. And that what the pro was struggling with was when he would tee off, he was concerned that it wasn't just his game that he had to worry about, but it was his livelihood. Because he said if he makes that error that everybody does and shanks a shot, well, who's going to sign up for lessons with him? And there goes his income. So he even addresses that in the book. And I think that was just another one of those excellent examples, another one of those actionable things. And, you know, I won't give away too much because you can enjoy it when you read it or download it. But he talks about that and I'll listen to it on my way to the course and it'll help. So that's my number one. I'd say, personally, if I were you, if you were to ever invest in just any mental game golf books, that would be the one. But a very close second, and this is actually a new one. They don't have an audio book out yet. I encourage the guys. I hope that they put one together for that same reason, for those same benefits. But the other book that I found to be a tremendous help was it's called The Successful Golfer, Practical Fixes for the Mental Game of Golf. And that's by Dr. Paul McCarthy and Dr. Mark Jones. Those are the guys who had contributed the other article to us earlier. And actually, this book was just published this year. And I just, what I really stood out about this one was just the layout. I really like how it's done. It's great for people like Mike. You say, I don't really like to read or sit down and go through the whole thing. This is the perfect book for jumping around. They split it up into three really easy to use, really helpful sections. The first section identifies, like I think I mentioned this earlier, it's the top 50 mental game faults that people struggle with. We just went through the top five, and these guys, they cover 45 more. So there's a ton of concept. Each one is really easily consumable, really actionable. They're all about 1 to 2 pages. And what they'll do is they rate them faults on how common they are and how difficult they are to fix. Where you may want to jump around, just start with the easy fixes. You may want to jump around and just start with the ones that you're struggling with. There's some that may not pertain to you, but there's tons of great concepts in the book. I really like that they go through and they give you an example of each thing. They talk about, you know, here, this is what we just talked about. It said fault 33. I can't seem to get mistakes out of my head. That's like that triple bogey you had. Or one is short putts are my Achilles heel. Or I can't stop doubting myself on the golf course. All these are things that we've had. And what they'll do is you can just jump right to them in the book and that you can see what their solution are. And they have really great practice tips. The other thing that I liked about it is then the second segment, because these guys are sports psychologists, they like to get into the real meat of it, like the background of why this is, not just here's your problem, how to fix it. And they have a bunch of different research studies that they went through, why some of these things are happening, why people overthink their putts. They talk about, you know, they even have a chapter on why Tiger wears red. So they talk about that mental game, the confidence stuff. There's a lot of stuff they get into. And then in the final segment, they kind of wrap all that up with some really great methods that you can use to apply it. They go through, we talked in depth here about the pre-shot routine, and they've got a whole chapter on that and just how to develop that. They talk about goal setting. So there's a lot of stuff. But again, what stood out to me for this was that the way it's laid out, I haven't seen any other books that have this type of layout, something that you can jump around to. And this, again, is another type of book that's perfect to throw in the bag, because if you're out there and you're saying, hey, I'm struggling with, you know, whatever it may be, I often end up three putting when I have a great chance for a birdie, you know, fault number 12, you know, why that happened. You can jump to it. It's a page. You can read it between holes. So those, I encourage you guys to check those out. Again, we'll post all the links in the article. I'll have that article in the show notes. So that way you can go in and give those books a quick look. Thing I love about Amazon, and we always post the Amazon links because I like to consume that info as soon as I, you know, it strikes me. And, between Kindle and these audio downloads and everything else, I mean, you could be reading this by tonight. So I encourage everyone to check that out. Mike, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I just wanted to thank you for giving me about 12 different people on my holiday shopping list, an idea of what to get them, because that sounds like an awesome book for a bunch of people in my life. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're not kidding. It's a good stocking stuffer. I don't know. As long as the guy has a good sense of humor, doesn't think you're picking on his game, right? So anyway, encourage you to check those out. I also wanted to take a second here to mention, Mike and I were talking about some of our favorite courses earlier. We talked about some bucket list courses. And if you haven't had a chance to yet, I strongly encourage you to check out our golf directory. You can get to that easy. It's golfissy.com/golf-directory. There's also a link to it in the top menu. But I encourage you to check that out. Mike and I we've spent a lot of time this summer. We've really been committed to building that up. And what it is it's a directory of over 17,000 golf courses worldwide. And you have where you can post player reviews on there. So, post your reviews. Let us know what you think about different courses. We want to hear what you think are some of your better courses. And even if you're just looking for a new place to play, each course is loaded with information. I mean, everything from your basics, the address, contact info, how to make a tee time, and you can even book a tee time on there. But what we even included is we got in depth of, you know, how many bunkers are on the course. And, you know, if you happen to be entertaining, things like food options. I mean, we have on there, I think we have as a snack bar or not, right, Mike?
That's right. It's a real cool thing, and we'd love it if you guys can help us out by simply just posting reviews of the course you play every single day. I mean, just go on there real quick. It's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. Pop it in. Let other people, let other users on the site know about the course before they go and play it. It'll mean a lot to us. Thank you. I appreciate it. And definitely check that out.
Yeah, and you can really help us. We're trying to build like a nice, you know, worldwide just the database of all the golf courses and what players think. I mean, we hear enough about from magazines and everything else of what the best courses are. But well, let's hear what the players think. You know, who was out there? Which ones did you enjoy? Which ones did you not? So jump on there. Like I said, create a free account and just start rating them. Other than that, we want to thank everybody for listening. We're going to be back again next week. And if you get the opportunity, please leave us those reviews on iTunes. We're going to be sharing a few like we did today. We're going to be sharing them on the podcast. Again, that's why we do this. That's why we spend the time. That's why we built this, you know, website. We started this podcast because we love sharing, you know, what we've learned about the game, and we love learning the game. So we learn a lot from what we hear from you guys. So shoot us over those topic suggestions. You know, we're going to see if we don't already have information on them. We'll get it. We'll talk about it on the podcast. Also, make sure you check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/golficity or tweet us at golficity on Twitter. We want to hear from you guys. And as always, as I mentioned earlier, you can get us directly. You can email Mike and I at podcast@golficity.com. Those come directly to us. So if there's anything you want us to talk about, shoot that over. So until next week, hope you're out there getting as many rounds in as you can before the winter hits. Or if you live down south, we can be jealous of you all winter. So enjoy it, and we'll be back with you next week.